You're invited to travel the world and discover what it means to live the intercontinental life. With more than 200 properties worldwide, Intercontinental Hotels and Resorts welcomes you to iconic properties in global destinations including New York, London, and Shanghai. Discover more about these cities and the tales they inspire with Stories of the Intercontinental Life, a collection of stories that will excite your curiosity and offer new perspectives on the world. Hear more at intercontinental.com/life.
Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. The bond market's message is things economically are close to dire. The stock market, still near record highs, indicates everything is fine. Can both be true? We'll bring in a Journal Markets columnist in a moment to decode Wall Street's mixed messages. First, some money and market news you should know. Well, you don't need us to tell you that the nation's biggest metropolitan areas are also the most expensive places to retire. Places like San Francisco, New York, Washington, D.C., even Honolulu. But if you're looking for inexpensive places to retire, the personal finance site WalletHub says look to Texas and Tennessee. In fact, Laredo, Texas tops the list with its extremely low cost of living, and the city doesn't tax pensions or Social Security income. Also on the list, Memphis and Knoxville, Tennessee, then Huntington, West Virginia, and Fort Smith, Arkansas round out the top five. Two more Texas cities, San Antonio and Amarillo, also make the list. Now, WalletHub used the cost of living index data from the Council for Community and Economic Research to narrow down the list. It measures numerous costs, including groceries, housing, utilities, transportation, and health care.
You let him try violin because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Charles Dickens may as well have been writing about the tale of two markets. But how do we make sense of a bond market telegraphing fear coupled with a stock market that still remains near record high levels? Let's bring in Wall Street Journal Markets columnist James McIntosh to help us clear things up. So, James, you know, oftentimes we see relationships and movement between the bond market and stock market. But as you point out in your column, those ties were severed almost entirely in August.
Yeah, August was really quite dramatic. You had some of the best performances from treasuries the third best month ever for the longest treasury bond, certainly among the best performances from other durations of bonds. Really quite extraordinary. Stocks, though, down a little bit, but really not the sort of thing that shows any particular signs of worry. And this disconnect, frankly, has had me scratching my head for quite a while, because it's whilst August was especially extreme, it's been going on for quite a while before that as well.
You know, but stock market investors moving from riskier to safer stocks, which they did, usually doesn't translate to the market staying at such a high level.
Well, exactly. So the interesting thing is you can say, look, there has been this rotation within the market. So people have bought things that look like bonds, and that's helped to hold the market up a bit. They're searching for safety. They're not ready to panic. And, of course, even stocks that don't look like bonds benefit from lower bond yields. Companies can borrow more cheaply. Future expectations of interest rates are lower, so they expect to be able to borrow more cheaply in future too. Of course, people expect less inflation in the future, so future profits are worth more in today's money because they won't be eroded by inflation. So all of those things help to hold up stocks. But still, the sense of just total exceptionality that's going on in the bond market hasn't carried over into stocks, and that's what's forming this puzzle.
Another mystery is how the stock market can stay so high when investors ran to gold to take cover amid fears of a weakening economy. You know, usually money used to buy gold a lot of times comes from money investors are holding in stocks.
Well, this is one of the questions. So have people panicked and bought gold and bonds, Or have they just quite rationally said, look, we're expecting a slower economy, lower inflation, lower interest rates. All of that will be good for corporate profits. It'll help to offset the lower interest rates will help to offset the impact of the lower profits. We don't really expect a profit collapse. Gold does well because we expect lower interest rates, and that means that the zero yield on gold is less bad than it usually is. Plus, of course, much of the rest of the world is also buying gold because they do face much more serious trouble, including the what looks like a plausible case that Germany is heading into recession, for example.
But you say we might better understand market sentiment through how investors are buying junk bonds.
So this is, if you're feeling bullish, and again, this says, well, things really aren't that bad, right? Junk bonds, you would expect if there's a recession coming, junk bonds would get trashed. No one wants to hold the worst quality companies if profits are about to collapse, if there's going to be a recession, because the bond might not pay you back, right? This is going to be one of the worst places to be. And, sure enough, ahead of previous recessions, they've acted as a little bit of a bellwether, giving you some warning that things were getting bad. At the moment, they look fine. Tiny bit worse, but similar to stocks, just only a little bit worse. So that does give some support to the idea that actually the stock market isn't just ignoring the bad news out there, that maybe there is something rational and reasonable going on, at least at the moment, that, we've had some bad news, the bad news is priced in, but so far it's not bad enough to say, well, there's definitely a recession on the way.
It brings to mind President Franklin Roosevelt's historic phrase, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And maybe fear is feeding into fear and not legitimately in response to, real negative pressure on the markets. Like you say, there could be just some rational activity going on.
Yeah, I mean, these are the sorts of, in the first cut of history that we're working on, of course, it's very hard to know. And it may be that the stock market is once again proven to be wildly over-optimistic, just as it was in 2007, and repeatedly since. On the other hand, it may be that the people who are panicking and buying bonds are just going way too far. Exactly that happened in 2016. Not quite as extreme, but there was this extreme rush for the longest duration bonds out there in 2016, and the people that bought them got hosed.
All right. Indeed, they did. All right. That is Wall Street Journal markets columnist James McIntosh on the line from us from our London bureau. James, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.